This is a podcast from Minute Media.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And in The Stack, we talk about a bunch of comic books that have come out today, and we review them.
I just wanted to throw that in there
right at the end.
We've done enough of silently honoring them. Now it's time to throw some opinions into the mix.
All right, let's do it, starting with one of the biggest issues ever.
Of all time.
In the history of comics. Detective Comics number 1,000. As you all know, we reviewed the previous 999 issues of Detective Comics.
Yep.
Now we're moving on to 1,000. This is mostly a jam issue. It's some
of the
greatest current writers and current artists on Batman all working together. Tell a bunch of short stories about the detective. How'd you guys feel about this issue? Pete, I know these sorts of short story collections are not your favorite thing.
Yeah, they bother me. But I really...
Because you're like, they don't matter.
Yes, and also, like, because you usually, it's, you get one or two good ones, and then some ones where you're like, why would you, you know what I mean? So it's not worth it sometimes.
Yeah, but that's a mixed bag. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, but, you know, maybe... Say, hey, you know what? Your story blows. I'm not going to publish it.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, the term mixed bag, we've talked about this on the podcast before. You go into the pick-a-mix machine, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
You get a little M&M's, you get some Sour Patch Kits. They get all over each other.
Oh, Alex is making another candy analogy, and I don't quite get it. I'm a health nut.
You're a health nut?
It's like Gorp, then.
Yeah, okay, Gorp. Now we're talking.
That's a mixed bag.
Good old raisins and peanuts. You know, that's what that means.
Okay, all right. But
I'm a country boy.
Yeah, I know. I liked this. I thought this was great. I also really thought it was cool, the kind of like longest case that Batman ever worked on. I thought that was a fun reveal.
That felt like that was the first story, Scott Snyder, Greg Capullo, like classic Scott Snyder, like it's been seated forever and we get a nice reveal here. Mm-hmm. I thought it was funny, though, that Batman was the last person to join this secret society.
Yeah, right.
To me, I was like, wait a second. He's the world's greatest detective.
Yeah, how did he not figure this out?
Slam Bradley.
Hawk Girl figured it out first.
Yeah, well, but I guess they had different mysteries.
Yeah, they also had like different initiations. Yeah, they probably made Batman's really hard
Detective
on purpose.
Detective Chimp was like, can you not eat this banana? And he was like, I cannot. And they were like, you're in the club.
What do you guys think of the Kevin Smith story in which Batman tracked down the gun that shot his parents and melted it into a new insignia?
That was awesome.
I knew you were going to like it.
Was it, though?
What are you talking about? That was the coolest.
I felt the speech, the way it was written, was very didactic.
Dude,
I don't know if that's the right word,
bro.
But
it's better when you look at the pictures.
The art is very nice throughout this book. It's all good, solid Batman art.
There's Jim Lee on that
one. I got to be honest, there's nothing... Everything was solid across the board, but nothing really blew me away in this issue.
I thought there was a bunch of like touching stuff, which I appreciate.
I really like the Paul Dini story. It felt very much like Batman the Animated Series, so much so that I could hear the voices. And so that was nice.
Yeah.
I thought there was a lot of cool feel-good stuff in here.
It's a good issue. If you're a Batman fan, definitely pick it up. But at the same time, we've talked about this a lot on the podcast. To me, what is currently going on in Batman in all of the titles is very exciting.
Yeah.
I love reading it. I don't know what's going to happen next. This felt like a step backwards.
Oh, really? Maybe I just love anthology so much, or like short story collections, because I just love different people's takes. I thought the Denny O'Neil story with Leslie Tompkins was like so harsh.
Yeah.
She was like sort of shitting on Batman, which I was like, wow. But I appreciated like a different take on that character. I loved the Tom King story.
Oh, yeah.
So cool.
That was
Bendis.
Oh, my bad.
And that one was good. But the Tom King story with the family, and the reveal is that they're taking a family picture.
Yeah.
I love that. I feel like he captures the individual voice of the character so well. Super fun.
What did you think about the final reveal? The last big introduction of the story was the introduction of the Arkham Knight, a video game character, into continuity in Batman comics. You guys psyched for that?
Let me be honest, as not a huge gamer, I had no idea that was a video game character, and I liked it. I mean, Peter J. Tomasi, I just love his... Mm-hmm. I mean, he's the current writer on Detective Comics, so to have him... I was like, oh, I didn't see a story from him, and I was bummed. And then the last one I thought was cool. The art was great. Doug Monkey on art. It was very cool.
Yeah, I also could, as a non-gamer, could have probably cared less about the Arkham Knight reveal. It didn't feel like the big move of the issue. But to your point, Tomasi writes Batman so well, it feels dangerous even if you don't know the character. And I'm more excited to go to Detective Comics 1001 than I was personally to read this issue.
Yeah, I mean, we've got so much stuff to deal with right now in Batman. It's driving me nuts that we still haven't gotten to it.
Well,
he's got a whole, like, you know, engagement / marriage thing to get to the bottom.
That's the other title, though. So this is not even.
Yeah, I know, but I'm just saying there's a lot going on with Batman, and I want to get to the bottom.
You're saying he's got a busy life.
Yeah.
Yeah, imagine the Wayne Enterprises. He's probably got a lot of meetings.
Oh, man. So many meetings.
Yeah. He's got to buy soup with Alfred.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Alfred can serve him soup that he doesn't eat.
That's a story that we haven't been told.
Right?
Is Alfred. I almost said Alex, which is a great, maybe that's a character to introduce.
Sure, yeah.
Alex, the other butler.
I would love to be in a Batman book.
Alfred and Bruce buying soup.
Sorry. So we're sitting in a tiny office right now. Justin walked across the room and sat down at a barrel, but on the open end of it,
stuff
a bucket.
I didn't want to upset the barrel.
Sure.
I say it's also a bucket.
It's a bucket,
but it's not
an open bucket. And you're sitting on
an old-timey barrel. I thought you were going to go over a waterfall in it.
No, guys, this isn't a Wild West set we're recording in. This is an office with a bucket in it, and I'm sitting on the
bucket. Where's the rodeo there, barrel, Justin?
I'm a country boy. Gorp all day.
Yeah. Oh, is that full of Gorp? Okay, let's move on to our next book, Archie Comics, Sabrina the Teenage Witch, number one. This is a reboot of the classic witchy character. Like the Archie title, this is, I feel, hitting halfway between the Sabrina title and between Chilling Adventures of Sabrina on Netflix. I think it airs a little closer on the side of the Netflix show than, say, the Archie title does, splitting the difference between Archie Comics and Riverdale. But this is by Kelly Thompson, who is on a roll right now. I really enjoyed this. I thought this was a lot of fun.
I was really impressed with this.
Really?
Wow. Wow. I'm liking this more than the Netflix show.
What?
That's
why?
Crazy.
Why is that?
First off, you hate Archie, and this is very much in line with the Archie books.
Yeah, but it's done. I think it really does a good job of capturing Sabrina's voice in a way that is not too cartoony or not too, like, you know, sometimes some iterations of Sabrina, I don't feel like she's a real person. So I really thought this was great. And I love the interactions with the cat and the talking cat. I forgot how much I missed that. That was great.
Salem.
Yeah.
That Pete's take on this is the surprise of the week, which is an ongoing feature we do every week. Right?
Yes. Surprise of the week. Gotcha. What did you think, Justin?
I liked it. I mean, I prefer the darker take,
classic
old, the other series.
JT says. Yeah,
Chilling Adventures of Sabrina.
Yeah.
You like it dark.
What I think, I mean, they're not going to do that, though, right? That's Roberto Ocasio-Cossa. That's Robert Hack working on that book. They still haven't finished that book. Yeah. And I don't think they're going to have somebody else jump in and pick
definitely
up on
not,
it.
Yeah.
That would suck if they did.
But what I'm saying is I prefer the darker side, but this was fun. I really like the way that the spells are shown.
Yeah.
It's very cool. I like that we have Harvey, boring old Harvey, and a different bad boy than the TV show.
Yeah, right.
I expected that he was going to say he was Nick Scratch.
Too. Yeah. I wish.
Not Nick Scratch.
I wish.
Oh, yeah, man. That's why you didn't like this
but
as
I still
much
had the bad boy.
No, Nick Scratch.
Bad boy alert went off. Yeah. So don't worry. I'm still...
Just to give you guys a quick overview of this, if you have never read any Sabrina books, if you haven't seen the Netflix series, this is a total reboot. This is a fresh start. Sabrina moves to Greendale, goes to school, meets some new characters, so you can jump right in. Kelly Thompson is great at this stuff, did the same sort of thing on Nancy Drew, or over at Marvel has been doing the same thing with a lot of different characters there. This is a lot of fun.
Yeah,
it really is.
All right, moving on to a Marvel book, Doctor Strange, number 12. This kicks off a new storyline where Doctor Strange is going head-to-head with Galactus. Not
head
somebody
to head or cheek to cheek, because I think they're going to be friends.
Oh, that cheek to cheek? Is that what you do with your friends?
Yeah, I do.
No, that's dancing, usually.
That's dancing, but also that's an old Shakespearean thing.
Right. Phrase. So this is Mark Waid and Barry Kitson working on the book. I don't know what you're doing right now, Pete. What did you guys think
cheek
about this?
Cheek to cheek.
Lady in Red.
Yep. Yes.
Lady in Red.
I got you. Here, I'll pick up what Pete's reminiscing about his prom, I'm assuming.
Oh, Pete went to the prom in the, what was it, 1930s?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Okay. A Lady in Red.
Two feet apart. You had to be 2 feet apart at all times.
Exactly. And thanks for maintaining that, because as we all know, Pete is always adhering to standards, principal standards when it comes to fraternizing with his dates. Doctor Strange, Galactus gets pushed into the mystical realm, and Doctor Strange has to go deal with it. I think it's fun. It feels like you wouldn't expect these two guys to be hanging out. It's a classic Riggs and Murtaugh situation.
Yeah. Wait, is Galactus getting too old for the shit?
Definitely.
Yeah?
Galactus is too old for the shit. He was just trying to eat, and some magician was like, you're going to a mystical universe.
I'll tell you what, come on. Mark Waid introduces this character, the story, who's some alien whose planet is going to be eaten by Galactus. This is how this sets the whole thing off. And I love this alien just shows up to Earth and like starts screaming at Doctor Strange, being like, Tell me how to get rid of Galactus. Yeah. You need to kill us. And that's the entire issue. And the entire issue is Dr. Strange being like, I don't know how to get... What are you talking about? This is not me. Which is a fun story. Like, it plays out in a really enjoyable way.
I really like the way this ended, setting up the next issue. I think, like, for me, it started a little weird, but I like where it got up, kind of got going, and then where it ended. And then I'm excited for the next comic very much. And also, they kind of gave you a little teaser image.
Yeah.
That's called a cover, and that's usually the front of a comic book.
Oh,
you're a piece of shit.
Cool.
It's a new thing they're trying out.
That's smart.
Yes. Usually there's just a bunch of loose pages in a bag when you get a comic book.
Exactly.
Marvel's trying new stuff.
I like to put my own comic together. You know what I mean?
You just take the staples out and throw it in the air.
Yeah, it's a real mixed bag.
No, nice. Good. No wonder you have no idea what's going on in most comics.
Yep. Let's move on to a Valiant comic book, Fallen World number one. I don't know how much you guys have read either the Bloodshot books or the Rye books or anything like that. This is very deep continuity,
yes.
Right? Now.
I feel that.
Yeah. I mean, I'll say, as somebody who has read all of those books, I love this. I thought this was great, but I think this might be a deep dive for newer readers.
I've read some of the Bloodshot. I think I get most of what's happening, but it definitely feels like you're reading almost like a history book. And if you don't know the details, it's hard to follow along. But it's still fun. I like it's very world. It almost reads like Fellowship of the Ring kind of series.
To give you guys the brief rundown of what's happened leading up to this book, there's a character called Rye who takes place in the year 4000-something in the Valiant universe. He was the protector of a place called New Japan. New Japan was told they were the only survivors of Earth, and they were on this enormous, massive space station with billions of people. Rye found out that Father, the AI that controlled New Japan, was lying to everybody, and through a series of circumstances, including discovering Earth's geomancer, who is essentially the spirit of the Earth, the person who communicates with the Earth, and bringing the Eternal Warrior back, ended up crashing New Japan to Earth. And that's where we pick up with this. The other thread that this is picking up on is that Bloodshot was briefly, in his own title, taken into the future and stuck there in Rye Times. So we're getting the crossover.
Rye Times.
Rye Times. That's what I say when I get a sandwich down at Katz's. I'm like, it's Rye Time.
Cool, that's cool. I say that when I'm ordering some brown liquor at the bar.
Ooh.
It's Rye Time. Pete, what do you say?
I don't ever say that.
You don't ever say that?
When you're a little sardonic, maybe you say, it's Rye Time. Anyway, this book is picking up on all those threads, which definitely feels like a deep dive. I do think they give you the basic information you need to know there. And to your point, it feels epic, this book. It's very big.
Yeah, I'm reading a bunch of the Valiant titles. I'm enjoying a lot of it. I don't know everything about what's going on, but I followed it well enough that I'm very much enjoying what's happening, and especially this issue. And I thought it ended in a great place as well. Also, some badass kind of like reveals, like the kind of like creepy, like kind of like samurai sword looking dude was pretty cool.
I think that's Rye.
Yeah,
there's basically
the guy in red.
Yes, I've read all the books, and I still am not 100% sure if Bloodshot and Rye are the same guy.
Okay.
Like, they kind of have reverse colors on each other.
Yeah.
That guy there.
The guy at the end? Yes, yeah. That's Bloodshot. Yeah. Bloodshot, spoiler at the end of the book, has been corrupted by Father. So you're essentially getting Bloodshot, this good guy who is friends with the Eternal Warrior, as the bad guy.
So it's Bloodshot fighting Bloodshot at the end here?
No, but no, Rye is not Bloodshot. Yeah. No, that's not Bloodshot. That's Rye.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I'm definitely following everything.
Yeah, good. Again, good.
Anyway, this book is good. I'm really enjoying it. Moving on to an Image comic book, Skyward number 11. We've been checking in with this one every now and again, and I've been generally enjoying this book. It's about a world where there is no gravity. One girl may hold the secret, the key to getting gravity back, and she goes on an epic cross-country journey to get it back. Something that she discovered halfway through the book is between cities... the book posits that when there is no gravity, insects grow to enormous size because essentially the only thing actually keeping them small is gravity.
Is that true?
According to the back matter of the book, they said they researched this and found this out. I haven't double checked it.
Yeah.
But that's the take, and seems this is legit. Picking up. They think they're going to bring gravity back, but they're also racing against time because an army of insects are about to eat Chicago.
Yeah.
What'd you think about this issue?
I loved it. I really think this is a creative comic, and they do a lot of like really fun things in this book. And also really great last page reveal that I really appreciated. I think this is very cool art, and I'm on board.
I like this a lot, too. I feel like this book takes some fun, creative swings.
Yeah. I think it's getting better as it goes along, honestly. I feel like one of the things we talked about in the first issue or two was the prose felt a little stilted.
Yeah.
This feels much more comfortable now.
Yeah, definitely.
So it's good.
I really enjoy it.
It reminds me of, what's the series? I really liked it about the female sheriff on another planet.
Oh, Copperhead?
Copperhead. It reminds me a lot of Copperhead.
I can see that.
It's got a strong premise, and then as you build out the world, it sort of opens up a lot more.
Yeah, the thing that I thought was really interesting reading the back matter of this is the big reveal at the end is not something they actually planned, which I feel like not a lot of writers cop to ever.
Yeah. No, and I love that.
Yeah. Just kind of throwing that in there. It's good.
And they also in Copperhead, if there was no gravity, snakes would be huge.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a great point.
If there's no gravity, everything gets big.
Think about the snakes.
That's why everything is so big in Texas. No gravity.
I haven't been in a while, but I love it down there.
Over to DC Comics. This is a new Wonder Comics book, Dial H for Hero number 1. It is back from DC Comics. I don't know where I was going.
It's good. Yeah, what were you going to say?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure what I was going to say.
It is back from hell. It was in hell briefly.
The concept of Dial H for Hero, which you can probably figure out, is there is a mystical phone that if you dial it, you get a superpower, and that's the only time you get that superpower. There's been different variations on it over the years. Yeah. But this one, a new kid gets the H dial, a bunch of heroes feel it happening. How'd you feel about this first issue?
I just want to briefly dip into Rye Time and say that in the past, I haven't loved this premise. Dial H for Hero has always been.
What is that?
Well, it just always feels like, wait, what? Sometimes the phone is like a different looking thing. So this, though, I liked a lot. I feel like going back to the old rotary phone feels more interesting now because we don't have those really anymore.
Yeah.
And the fact that it's from a more youthful point of view, I think the most recent iteration of this was like a dark take on it. And I was like, hold on. So this feels like fun and a little bit brighter, and I'm into it.
What about you, Pete?
I've never been a fan of this.
You hate phones or heroes or the letter H.
Whoa. I'm a big fan of the old rotary phone.
You still have one, right?
Yep.
Your cell phone's rotary.
Yeah, you got to really want to call somebody. You know what I mean? It's a lot of work. It's a lot of effort. But, I don't know, man. Cool. Keep trying it, guys. I don't know what to tell you.
Wow. Talking about Rye Time.
I tried reading it a couple times to be more positive.
Keep trying, guys. Good luck to you all. I was all right with this. I think there is something, I feel very split on the whole rotary phone of it. I wanted there to be some sort of call out for this kid being like, what the fuck is that thing? I've never seen that thing in my life.
I hate that joke.
Even my daughter, who was not even 3, knows what an old phone is.
Right.
I think people, it's not like people don't know what it is. But this reminds me, this take on it reminds me of being a kid and just like creating heroes and drawing them and stuff. And to actually just take the step and become them, I think is cool and fun.
Yeah, I'm more excited for the second issue of this because I feel like it's just getting started. They're just setting up the premise. They spent a lot of time at a very ridiculous Rob Liefeld-esque parody of a hero, which is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But it takes up a good chunk of the issue when I would want to be delving into the characters and the situations more.
Right.
But it's enjoyable. It's good. And it's actually all ages, which weirdly a lot of these Wonder comics have not been.
Right.
So I think it's good to hand to a kid if you want to.
Yeah. Cool. Hand him a piece of crap.
What?
Whoa. What?
What did you say?
Nothing.
What the fuck did you say?
I don't know. I'm drinking rye over here.
All right. Moving on to Marvel comic books, Star Wars Vader Dark Visions number 2. This is a new Star Wars series from Dennis Hopeless, who's not named Dennis Hopeless anymore.
Hopeless is in quotes. Yeah. Dennis Hopeless Halem, I believe.
Halem, yes. Or Halem. His actual name.
Yeah.
So he's retaking his name and retaking Darth Vader. This is a series of short stories that show the galaxy, how they are affected by the terror of Darth Vader. I like the first issue of this just fine. I thought the second issue was a good story about how scary Darth Vader is as well. There's some insane action in here.
Yeah.
What'd you guys think of the book?
A lot of choking out, man. A lot of choking out.
A little bit, then a lot of being scared of it.
Yeah. And then a great use of the that monster that Han Solo flew into there.
Yeah, the asteroid worm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like this a lot. It was a great sustained action sequence, which I feel like we don't get a ton of in comics in general.
Word.
A lot of it's like action sequence, conversation, action sequence. This felt like one long movement of this great space chase and battle. And the art in here is pretty wild. The main Imperial dude is bugged out the entire time, and it's drawn in a way where his eyes are like flying out of his face.
Oh, yeah.
It, very
it
expressive.
Was not quite as far as this, but it reminded me a little bit of Kelly Jones's art.
Yeah.
Without being quite so exaggerated, but it's fun. It's a good book, and very different from Charles Soule's Vader book, very different from Kieran Gillen's Vader book, but I like it. Moving on to another book that's been one of our favorites here on the show from Image Comics, Ice Cream Man, number 11.
Man.
Now, this arc of Ice Cream Man continues to reveal what the Ice Cream Man is all about now that we know that he is this dark elf-type being who's causing chaos on the universe. This issue takes on reality TV.
Definitely.
And puts a character through a bunch of reality TV programs. What'd you think about it?
Now, this comic just really does an amazing job of being creative in a creepy way that you really don't know what you're going to get, but every time it comes out, I can't wait to get it.
Yeah.
This comic is the top of my pull list, and I don't know what I'm going to get, and that's kind of part of the fun. The whole mannequin bit doing the, like, talking to the camera was hysterical.
It's funny.
She's talking about how she's not superficial. Oh, it was just... It's creative. It's really fucked up. Yeah, I don't know how this is going to end. I don't know how this is going to unfold.
Just like life.
Yeah, you seem very concerned, Pete.
Well, I just want it to end well because I've been enjoying it so well, so much, that if the ending's not good, it can kind of ruin it for you. So I'm hoping that it sticks to the landing. But so far, it's been an amazing ride.
Yeah, and you've been visited by the Ice Cream Man in your real life, right?
Yeah, yeah. In the real life, it's not this scary.
Yeah. Yeah. I like this issue. This isn't one of my favorite ones of the run. I feel like it's fun and funny, but what I love about this book are the surprising, dark, twisted, like, moments.
Dude,
that happened.
It had dark, twisted moments.
Yeah, but it
that were like, a surprise.
But I guess it was like, I knew the take of, like, I don't like reality. Like, reality TV is harmful. And just exploring that, I was like, I know this take. Like, I like the way other stories have gone into just stuff where I'm like, oh, I don't think this way. I haven't seen this before. And it's felt like, and while it was funny, and it's still, this is a great book, so I still liked it. I like the other issues better.
I agree with you on that. I think that, and also just mentioning all the stuff about phones and everything, it timed it where the rest of it has felt very timeless.
Yeah.
Even when they've had it in a modern setting, there was one issue that was completely set in an office building, mostly around a guy falling down an office building the entire time. Fucking terrifying, the entire issue.
Yeah.
Absolutely great. Definitely set now. But this one, to your point, it felt like Doctor Who episodes I've seen before. It felt like other supernatural shows I've seen before, while still having absolutely stunning, gross art throughout. The character work is good. It still feels dangerous. It still feels scary throughout the book. But I agree with you at your point, Justin, that this is one of the lesser issues just in terms of thematics.
But also what's impressive about this book is that it's each issue is so different, but yet it feels all within this Ice Cream Man kind of world. So it does a good job of doing that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And you get information, just like scant, tiny little bits of information about what's going on throughout the issue in terms of the greater story. So definitely pick it up, even if it is a slightly lesser issue of a fantastic series. Mm. Last one we're going to talk about from DC Comics, Heroes in Crisis, number 7. Oh. And this is the one where you continue to wonder exactly what's going on in Heroes in Crisis. Actually, to be fair, it opens it up considerably in terms of the mystery. Once again, we're slowly, ever so slowly peeling back the onion of the main mystery, which is a bunch of deaths of heroes in the DC universe around a facility called Sanctuary that's supposed to be a safe haven where you work out your issues. Turns out things went very wrong. Harley Quinn and Booster Gold both thought each other have killed the people outside. Turns out it might be somebody else.
Yeah.
What did you think about this issue?
I like that reveal very much because I would be super pissed if it was one of those two. So I'm glad that wasn't it. I'm very interested to see where this goes. The Flash stuff was heartbreaking.
Yeah, I feel like the what's great about this comic is the way they're just slowly pushing Wally West into just showing how damaged he is and how, like, just in a bad place. And this issue really just heartbreaking. The flower, different scenes of the flower, the talking head bits with him. Like, it's great. Yeah, I really like this. I know this book is sort of controversial.
You know, like, just the tone of it is just,
I just really like it.
It's, yeah, as a Wally West fan, this is really hard to read. You're a huge
Wally West fan.
Wally West is my favorite Flash. Wally West is one of my favorite comic book characters ever. Watching him being broken down like this is excruciating. Like, the implication of what they're saying at the end of the issue may or may not have happened. I don't want to spoil it for anybody. Is gut-wrenching. I don't want things to go in that direction. But to your point, the talking heads in particular, the way Clay Mann draws them, from Wally West saying, okay, I'm going to go on this thing. I think this is going to be good for me. First week, here we go. And then there's another whole page where he's like, second week, still doing great. But you could see him starting to fall a little bit. And then it's third week, doing awesome. And it's awful to watch. Yep. It's absolutely awful to watch as he's broken down, as his happiness, like 5% each time, disappears. That's good art. That's good writing throughout. So I agree with you. Even if it's controversial, it's very well done. A lot of it, though, is going to be based on how it all turns out at the end.
Yeah, I guess we will see.
And you guys will see if you support us at patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. at the People's Improv Theater Loft in New York. Come on down. We'll chat with you about comics. Pete, what else do you want to plug?
Friend us on Facebook so you get to know about the amazing guests we have on our live show.
Follow us on Twitter at Comic Book Live.
Check us out at comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and more. And we'll see you at the comic book shop.
Oh, this bucket.